You're listening to Bible Prophecy Daily, a weekday podcast where Bible prophecy matters and matters greatly.
Let's continue our discussion, Crown Me, the Price of Victory. Prince Charles was finally crowned King of Great Britain September 8th, 2022. After waiting 73 years, his whole life, in a sense, waiting for his mother to die. Undoubtedly, mixed emotions. Took the death of his mother for him to become king, because she certainly was not going to abdicate the throne while she was still alive, and didn't. Sadly, January 2024, Prince Charles was diagnosed with an unspecified cancer after he was being treated for prostate problems. I mean, really. You wait your whole life to be king, and when you finally get it, within days, you're diagnosed with cancer. Even if he lives to be 80 or 90, the little that he will do, the honors that he will receive, in some way must pale when compared to his mother. I can't imagine it. As you watch the pomp and the circumstance and the crowning and all of that, to receive it so late in life, given the nature of kingship in Great Britain, I just have to imagine, in the quiet moments of his own mind, that there are some disappointment and regret. To be promised to be king, and then have to wait your whole life, and then to get it, only to be reminded quickly that it will not last certainly as long as he has lived. As I looked at it and as I thought about it, I reflected that we Christians have been promised a kingship. Revelation chapter 3, verse 21 says that the one who conquers, Jesus is speaking, I will grant him to sit with me on my throne, as I also conquered and sat down with my Father on his throne. You are going to have the privilege of reigning with Jesus Christ. The Apostle Paul writes in 2 Timothy chapter 2, beginning at verse 11, if we have died with him, we also will live with him. If we endure, we will also reign with him. If we deny him, he also will deny us. If we are faithless, he remains faithful, for he cannot deny himself. Interestingly, in both Revelation 3:21 and 2 Timothy 2:12, there is expressed conditionality. If we endure, Paul says, the one who conquers, John writes. It seems that to earn the right to sit with Jesus Christ on a royal throne, ruling over the coming promised physical manifestation of God's rule and reign on earth, is conditioned on our behavior. I know that most of you who are listening to this podcast by way of the prophecy have a great interest in prophecy. I understand that. I also understand that you are curious as to what biblical fulfillment there is and what is yet to come and the sequence of events that will fill up the times. I understand this. It's human nature. We always, as human beings, we want to know the unknown. And if you give us any glimpse or any details about it, we'll supply plenty extra details to try to figure out everything there is to know. But I can assure you, ladies and gentlemen, whether you know, fully understand, or appreciate what has been promised, at the end of the day, it won't really matter very much. What is going to matter is what happens once your eyes are opened from the sleep of death and you receive the rewards that our Lord has promised. It is so important. I cannot overemphasize how critical it is for you as a believer to be committed to be a disciple. A disciple is one that Jesus demands, commands. Take up your cross and follow me. In fact, in Luke chapter 17, Jesus says, if you don't take up your cross, you cannot be his disciple. Again, the conditionality, the necessity of our behavior conforming to the pattern of his expectations. I can only tell you that the church has failed in its task of warning New Testament believers regarding the seriousness of their future event when we will meet with Jesus Christ, traditionally called the Bema Seat, or the place of judgment. For the believer, it's the place of rewards, if we have any coming. I want to spend the rest of my life pushing, pulling, cajoling, whatever I have to do to try to get as many believers as I can to aspire to win the race, to win it so that God will pin on you the crown of life, the crown of glory, the crown of righteousness. These are important and critically necessary objectives for the life of anyone who wants to be found faithful. Of all the parables that Jesus gave, the parable of the talents that is recorded in Matthew chapter 25, verses 14 and following, along with the parable of the miners, the 10 miners, to me are the most frightening of all the parables that Jesus gave. It is even more concerning when you realize that the church has spent the better part of the last 300 years teaching that these parables refer to believers and unbelievers rather than believers. Believers who will face a judgment. Now, there will be no condemnation in terms of salvation here, but there will be criticism for unfaithfulness. The parable of the talents, as it is detailed in Matthew chapter 25, ought to be the most preached sermon in the New Testament church in this modern age, particularly given that Christians are being taught, or they have been taught, that rewards are not important. If you get them, fine. If you don't get them, no big deal. After all, you're saved. You're going to live forever. And that's really enough. Please, my friends, please, don't allow yourself to be lulled into complacency that you are not required to give every ounce of your energy to being what the Lord wants you to be at His return. That's why I'm doing this series, The Catching Away That Jesus Promises, that great ethereal reunion that Paul promises in 1 Thessalonians 4, challenges us to be ready. To be ready for His coming. For the unbeliever, readiness, of course, requires that he have the righteousness of God. But for the believer, your being ready means that you have lived successfully with the opportunities, the talents, if you will, that Jesus Christ gave you. Matthew reports in chapter 25, beginning at verse 14, "For it will be like a man going on a journey, who called his servants and entrusted to them his property." Now, this parable, of course, is a story of common interest. Most people hearing it would not have discerned anything particularly special about it. That was the Lord's intent. Only the insiders, only those who either asked or stayed around long enough got the meaning of the story. It's possible for there to be many insights gathered from it. The most important thing, however, is what did the Lord intend His listeners to discern from what He's saying? It's obvious now that we look back on it that Jesus is talking about Himself, that He is going on a journey. We now know that journey was back to heaven. But while He's gone, His servants are entrusted with His property. It would seem to me that such a detailed description would erase anybody having a fear that Jesus is here talking about unbelievers. What unbeliever could be trusted with our Lord's property? How would he understand it? I mean, there are so many issues that are contradicted by the conclusion that one of these servants of the Lord is in fact an unbeliever. It is not. He's talking to believers. He's talking about faithfulness, not faith in Him. We're told, to one He gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another He gave 1, to each according to his ability to be successful in the utilization of the resource given. This, again, in my mind, proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that these are believers. No unbeliever has the ability to please God. Hebrews tells us that without faith, it is impossible to please God. So why would Jesus Christ give an unbeliever who has no capacity to please God the responsibility of watching over God's property? Makes no sense. Verse 15 ends, "Then he went away." Verse 16 says, "He who had received the 5 talents went out at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money." Now, interestingly here, we're going to see that it is the 1 talent fella that is disappointed, that he disappoints his master. Now, the story here is to illustrate a simple truth. It is told from that perspective. The unfaithful could have just as easily have been the five-talent fella, or the two. In telling the story, Jesus sets it up a certain way, but there is no guarantee that just because you are given more opportunity that you will be more faithful. In fact, it's probably just the opposite. We all have probably seen people given tremendous talent that could have been used for the Lord, and they chose not to do it. Whenever I read this parable, I always think of Whitney Houston. Grew up in the church, singing gospel, beautiful voice, who decided to use that great God-given ability to sing for the world. Now, to be sure, she would occasionally do Christian music, but primarily she was a secularist. She sang music that the world would appreciate, only to die long before what most would have thought or would think was her time, and then to die in a very sad way. I mean, there's just so many bad things about it. I can see in her someone given tremendous talent. I believe she was a believer. She grew up in the church. She certainly understood it. She understood what the gospel was. She understood faith. But her life was not a testimony to the greatness of God, even though she had every opportunity to do so. I believe that there are going to be many, many, many Christians whom God gave tremendous opportunities. And that's what I believe a talent is. It's an opportunity. What is the content of the opportunity may be different. In this story, of course, it's money, but it could be something else, and most likely is for the overwhelming majority of believers. He then gave them the responsibility to take the talents, the opportunities given in life, and utilize them for his kingdom. He promises, therefore, on the return, that he will bless and reward faithfulness. Verse 19 tells us, now after a long time, I'm always impressed with those who think that Jesus return was always any moment. It could not have been. In the story here, Jesus said he came back after a long time. Now, you certainly can debate how long is a long time. And I suppose we can assign a time when his return would actually be imminent. But I certainly wouldn't believe that it was in 20, 30, 40 years of his departure. Of course, pre-tribulars understand this, and John Walbert had to try to wiggle his way around to make it make sense, given that Jesus says in a parable that he's going to be gone a long time. It's amazing that people will not take the text at face value. After a long time, the master of those servants came and settled account with them. The settling of the accounts would be the Bema Seat judgment, I believe. And he had received 5 talents, came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here I have made 5 talents more. In other words, I'm returning the 5 and 5 more. Verse 21 says, his master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. Notice the commendation. Well done, good, and faithful servant. Please notice what the condition is. Faithfulness. Not faith. Faithfulness. Faith obtains salvation. faithfulness obtains rewards. Well done, good and faithful servant. That's commendation. You were faithful over a little. I'm going to set you over much. That's exaltation. Enter into the joy of your master. That's honoration. To be honored with the privilege of sitting with Jesus in his new kingdom. So faithful believers are promised commendation, exaltation, and honoration. It's a beautiful image. Beautiful, powerful, and worth investing your life to receive. Second, he says in verse 22, he also, who had the two talents, came forward saying, Master, you delivered to me two talents. Here, I have made two talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. Commendation. You've been faithful over a little, I will set you over much. Exaltation. Enter into the joy of your master. This is honoration. Now, later I'm going to talk about what it means to enter into the joy of the master. But it's an honor that God is going to bestow on his faithful. To enter into someone else's joy, you're not talking about physicality as much as you're talking about the mental mindset, the event, and what surrounds it.
Thanks for listening to Bible Prophecy Daily. We hope you learned something valuable today. Be sure to subscribe wherever you heard this podcast so you never miss an episode.